What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We're a progressive politics show broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory on UBC's Point Grey campus. I'm with my co-host Ajit.
What's up?
And I'm your host, Spencer Latu. And for today's show, we are speaking truth to power about the genocide of indigenous peoples. We check in on the fine policing that is going on Turtle Island and the Canada Post strike. But before we get to all that, I would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. And rather than keeping this as a tokenistic gesture to the indigenous people of Canada, as is generally done on UBC's campus, we will keep the indigenous struggle for self-determination and justice at the forefront of our consciousness. We'll begin this show and every show until there is justice for Indigenous people talking about colonialism. So we're coming in hot with some more news from the genocide. So I know that sometimes it seems a bit hyperbolic. Don't mind Ajit, he's learning how the microphones work. You tell people the Indigenous genocide of, you know, the genocide of Indigenous people is happening right now, and they kind of look at you with like an eye-rolling kind of, oh, there goes the SJW again with all the bleeding heart liberal kind of crap. And it's like, well, but wait, before you call me a bleeding heart, maybe we should just check in to see if this stuff is really happening. You know, is there really a genocide of Indigenous people going on? I mean, it's 2018. I don't see the RCMP lining up and shooting them.
Right.
You know, we don't have Louis Riel, a elected member of parliament, hanging from a galley anymore.
Yeah. Residential schools don't exist anymore.
Yes. We already did the truth and reconciliation thingamajig.
Right.
Things are fine. Yeah, look at them.
Made a museum, right?
They don't pay taxes on gas and cigarettes. They're totally fine. They just need to work harder. There's nothing structural about this except for this news. So we'll check out what's coming out of CBC. This is by Christy Kirkup. The headline is, examine monstrous allegations of forced sterilization of Indigenous women. That's from the NDP. All Canadians have a responsibility to ensure that these practices never happen again. So check this out. Talking about the genocide and the sterilization, this was a very common practice. This is unfortunately rooted in colonialism, racism, where we view and white supremacy, of course, where non-whites should not breed. I know they're using animalistic terms with them, just shows you their disposition towards these people. They don't think that they're people. So that's part number one of white supremacy, is you don't view Indigenous people, people of color, Black people, Chinese people, they're just not people.
You got to dehumanize them.
Exactly. So then when you sterilize them and against their own will, then it's okay.
You got a grounds of justification.
Exactly. So, this is from the article. The federal government and the provinces must examine monstrous allegations of modern-day forced sterilizations of Indigenous women, NDP reconciliation critic Romeo Saganash said Monday before he pressed for answers in the House of Commons. So Romeo Saganash, he is a great, awesome politician. He's the one that said a few weeks ago or a month or so ago that Justin Trudeau doesn't give a fuck about Indigenous people. So, you know, he's
that name sounded familiar.
Yeah, he's a one day I hope to get him on the show. We can call him a friend of the
show. Outspoken, to say the least.
He's exactly what's needed. I mean, and what's great too is watching white Canada get really butthurt over that. And it's like, oh my God, you snowflakes. Like, right. I'm sorry that he's telling you the truth and facts and owning you with logic.
Right.
And you can't handle that. Because it's true. Anyway, so back to the article. Coerced sterilization clearly breaches human rights standards that Canada must fight to uphold, Saganash in an interview Monday, and said that authorities should very carefully read Article 2 of the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide adopted by the UN in 1948. That international agreement says that genocide includes any acts committed with the intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group, such as imposing measures invented to prevent births within the group. Canadians should not tolerate allegations of forced sterilization in their country, Saganash said, and Ottawa must address the issue as victims share their stories. I think they have to take this seriously, said the MP from Northern Quebec, a graduate of the University of Quebec at Montreal's law school. Just the fact that it is happening and people are coming out makes it serious enough to look for a solution. The issue of forced sterilizations will also be raised at the UN Committee Against Torture this week when Amnesty International Canada and a national law firm call for accountability for the practice. Maurice Law is leading a proposed class action lawsuit against the federal government, the government of Saskatchewan, all its health authorities, and individual medical professionals. The lawsuit was launched in 2017. Yeah, 2017. Not 2007, not 1997, not 1917, but 2017. By two affected women in the Saskatoon Health Region who each claimed $7 million in damages. Now about 60 women are a part of the lawsuit. An additional 32 women have come forward to report they were sterilized without consent. Since the Canadian Press first published a story last Sunday, Associate Elisa Lombard said Monday, noting the women are mostly from Saskatchewan, but elsewhere as well. In its submission to the UN committee, Maurice Law said there has been no effort at a comprehensive review to understand the scale of the problem and the conditions that make forced sterilizations possible. So let's just talk about these conditions that are, that they're discussing here. So we're situated in Saskatchewan, epicenter of Canada, also where you know our socialized medicine health program came from.
Right.
So shouts out to Tommy Douglas and the Canadian. What was the CCP that was like that almost the somewhat socialist party?
Right.
Yeah. That you know really believed in nationalizing everything. And I like that idea because healthcare pretty awesome. We're not dying like the Americans are, so that's great.
Well,
so Saskatchewan
going bankrupt.
Yeah, we're going bankrupt. Both of them are terrible. Saskatchewan. So I mean, not necessarily what you think of when you think of progress.
Right.
But there is a progressive streak to it. However, on the other hand, we also have a long history of Indigenous genocide. So the prairies are generally where the expansion and the exploitation of Indigenous people and land kind of had to go down throughout history. So that's where, you know, you see Alberta and the tar sands, that's in the prairies. You see Manitoba and the Métis and that whole Louis Riel issue over there, and in Saskatchewan as well. So and Saskatchewan's energy companies and the like are constantly battling with tribes over land rights and the like. So that's all unceded territory in those provinces. Furthermore, if you compare the federal statistic for Indigenous people, so they make up about 24% of prisons, yet make up less than 4% of the population. Ironically, America's prison population, 22% of the world's, 4% of the world's population. So
right.
You see how when you have an overrepresentation, those numbers kind of seem to fit together. Anyways, if you just control for just the prairies, there you'll see something really shocking. So I was reading this book, Unauthorized History of the RCMP. Highly recommend. It's a must read for all Canadian leftists. In there, they talk about how at a point in the 80s or 70s when it was written, 100% of the female prisoners in the prairie provinces were Indigenous.
Right.
There was no other group other than Indigenous women in prison.
Not shocking, I think. probably because there weren't any Black Canadian women there.
Yeah, they're lucky there wasn't any Black people there.
Right.
Oh God. But and it just shows you what the role, and which is why I'm critical of prisons and the police in general, because I mean with numbers like 100%, you gotta see that there's some kind of like social control aspect. It's not just about people committing crimes.
Right.
Because if it was about people committing crimes, we'd lock up CEOs and the like. You know, we wouldn't just have Indigenous women,
right?
Solely Indigenous women of the female population.
It's just as much about who's committing the crime.
Yeah,
as it is about what the crime is.
Yeah, and who's policing them.
Right.
And the like. So Saskatchewan prairies, really horrible for Indigenous people. And I think now, even if you look at it in present day, it's about like 50% of the prison is Indigenous people. So in the prairie provinces. So that's kind of crazy because they don't make up 50% of the population.
No.
Make up less than 4%, but they're overrepresented. And we ask the question, why?
Well, I mean, poverty rates in general in prairie provinces are already much higher relative to other places like BC and, of course, eastern Canada. So of course, the situation of indigenous people as they are already, you know, kind of situated at the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder are obviously going to be much worse. And they're going to be clearly more vulnerable there as well.
So. It's almost like crime is rooted in the conditions of society and not individuals.
Right.
And it's not a just individual choice.
Personal responsibility, guys.
Yeah, personal responsibility. Hint that's sarcasm. Big sarcasm right there. And then to add on to it, not only are they victims of the criminal justice system, they're victims of the medical system I just praised. You know, like, now look at them now. Now they're being forcibly sterilized.
Right. And I mean, there are many people I feel who would make the argument that, you know, they're completely all right with this. You know, they think they're reasonable people. Not really. But, you know, what they think is, why have these people in such bad conditions bring more life into the world or whatnot? I mean, that's just ridiculous thinking then. Why that sort of logic is applicable to any part of people, right? Poor white people, why aren't they being sterilized, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm just saying, if you're all right with this, you know,
you got to get your mind right.
Right, or if you actually support it across the board, which of course they won't. No, they're just fine with it because it's indigenous people,
exactly.
The most marginalized people, right?
They're just stepping on the people who have already been stepped on before. Right. It's the easiest target for these people to knock down. So we'll get back to it. We'll finish up this article. This is a shocking story, though, I must say. The UN committee also listed a number of solutions, including a proposal to specifically criminalize forced sterilization as the single most effective, immediate, and enduring measure that could be taken to protect women from this practice. The Liberal government has not indicated is looking at this step. I'll just read more about the Liberals. Just, this is so shocking, but there's going to be a lot of choice words. During question period on Monday, Indigenous Services Minister Jane Philpott said the Liberal government knows coerced sterilization is a gross violation of human rights and reproductive rights. Good, I'm glad you know that. The federal government is actively working with provinces and faculties of medicine to ensure safe and culturally appropriate health care is available across the country, she added. This is not something that any one order of government can address alone, Philpott said. All Canadians have a responsibility to ensure that these practices never happen again. Okay. So this horrible person that just has watched over this happening since day one of colonization, since Canada began to be colonized hundreds of years ago, this shit has been going on. And then now she has the gall to say all Canadians have a responsibility to ensure these practices never happen again. No. You, specifically the government elected by the people to serve the people, which somehow in your mind you forgot that it also includes indigenous people.
Right.
Not only is this their stolen land we're currently on, which is crazy of in and itself, mm-hmm. it's also crazy that you are genociding them.
Right. I'm just a sorry ass excuse that this is not something that any order of government can address alone. What? Come on.
You specifically, right. The most powerful branch should probably get on the forced sterilization. Imagine if they were forcibly sterilizing white people. Oh, how fast?
This would be international news.
Oh my God. The United States would bomb us.
Oh yeah, probably.
Immediately.
We'd get annexed probably.
They're afraid of, these people are the same people that would be like, it's okay to be white. These are the same pieces of it that would say that.
I mean, of course it is. But why is it not okay to be indigenous?
Yeah, why? If it's okay to be white, why is it not okay to be indigenous?
Right.
Because there's only one group of people being targeted. Coerced sterilization. The worst thing. You are taking people's reproductive rights away from them.
Right.
How insane is that?
This sort of notion of purging society's most undesirables. It happens to the fact that this story is not in any news headlines at all. You know, the CBC, no, they don't care.
Because no!
They have no...
They're too busy talking about Stormy Daniels.
Right.
Not even in our country. But we have to know about Stormy Daniels.
Right, and whatever Trump's up to. Like,
Trump tweeted Adam shit. That is somehow news.
It's ridiculous. It is. No, and... Perfect example of what you gave. If this was happening, if this was happening to Chinese Canadians, to, you know, Indo Canadians, it would be huge headlines. And it's kind of indicative of the marginalized power that First Nations people or Indigenous Canadians have is that, you know, their issues aren't really heard unless, you know, we want to build a pipeline through their land and they're, you know, filibustering it, right? Like, it's very sad.
It's incredibly sad. And you know what? You was also sad that, I don't know if you were paying attention. I was somewhat paying attention at this time because it was my first year I could vote. And everyone was telling how we're going to strategically vote out the Conservatives because the Conservatives are horrible. They're the worst. And they are the worst. I'm not going to doubt that. They are the worst.
Sure.
Harper sucked.
Right.
He is now blaming Jeremy Corbyn for the world's problems. I'm very happy he's not in power. However, the notion that the Liberals are even a palatable solution to the problems that face our country, such as the fucking forced sterilization of Indigenous women. Mm-hmm. Like, what a barbaric act. This isn't even some abstract, you know, communist stuff that I get bogged down in. Oh, well, the exchange value of money is bad because of X, Y, and Z. And it's like, okay, Spencer, no one knows what you're talking about. Right. Forced sterilization. You are forcing people to no longer be able to produce a child.
Right.
Where are the pro-life people?
Hmm.
Where are the pro-life people? And just the notion that the Liberal government is somehow palatable in comparison to the Conservatives. Everyone that said that needs to rethink themselves. Because it seems that we voted for the kinder side of the same racist, genocidal coin that is the capitalist system.
Right. They're just a bit, they're just nicer.
They're nicer in certain ways.
Right.
They'll have
in rhetoric.
They'll have half, they'll put a female minister, Jane Philpott, to oversee the genocide. No, don't even have anyone overseeing genocide. Just don't have the genocide. Just no genocide. Stop.
Right. Yeah, no. The
That's not progress.
The track record speaks for itself.
That's not progress.
What the Liberals are, and you know, I think we made it pretty clear.
I'm just ballistic because I'm like, what is wrong with you people? I hope Jane Philpott comes to UBC and I'm just going to put like blood all over my hands and put it up behind her the whole time. Just so she knows. Just so she knows what she is.
Right.
A genocidal piece of shit. That's disgusting. That's so like, and then we're too busy crying about like, what are the stupid headlines about today? Did you read any headlines today?
I mean, good headlines about how GM is exploiting its workers, but again, this is an issue.
At least that's a real issue.
Right, right.
Yeah. Bigger than Adam Schitt.
Right. Or, you know, Jim Acosta getting his press credit. All right, you know what? Screw it.
Yeah, no. See, and that's what I'm saying, though, is we're bogged down with that crap.
Yeah, it's...
We're worried about Uber. Who gives a shit?
And these are centuries, as you mentioned right at the beginning of the monologue, these are centuries old tactics, colonial tactics. Specifically, I believe they did this to slaves or African Americans.
Yes.
Without a doubt, this has been practiced in every sort of colonized territory. And
yes,
the more important part is that this is happening now, or it just recently happened within the last 5 years.
2017, this lawsuit was launched. So last year. And what we all need to consider is that, wait, so there's a pattern here. So the settler colonial state of the United States of America, so they came over and did the same rounding up of Indigenous people, kicking them off their land, exterminating them. Except they had another fold in there where they brought slave labor over there to generate the wealth of the United States of America.
Right.
And then we look at Australia. What are they doing? They forcibly sterilize people over there. What do we all have in common? South Africa, they did that.
Right.
You know? What do we all have in common? Oh, yeah, we are settler colonial states. Right. So it doesn't matter where in the world you are. If you are a colonizer, this is how you treat the colonized, which is why this whole system is corrupt.
Right.
We need to start thinking about it in a new way because we're not going to solve the problems by doing the same thing over and over again. The fact that we're on stolen land is a contradiction in and of itself. How can you even have a country on stolen land?
Right.
The ills of society will not be solved just by, you know, electing the right people. That's not it. That's not the contradiction that we're dealing with. We don't have the wrong people in power. It's we have the wrong system on the wrong land on the wrong people.
Right.
And, you know, like this is going to have to become a part of a larger conversation with Indigenous people that we need to start having, especially people who consider themselves on the left.
Right.
You know, we start listening You know, like, I know this is a talk show and I'm speaking on behalf of Indigenous people, but, you know, there needs to be a larger conversation had of how we're going to deal with a real decolonization.
Right.
You know, a real way of, you know, of seeing the land as our, as part of us. Okay. We got to take a short break for commercials. We'll get right back and pick up this conversation right where we left it. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Hey there, my name is Callum Ng, the Executive Director of BC Athlete Voice. We're an athlete-focused organization helping British Columbia's athletes become their best. How do we do that? Well, if you're a BC athlete, we can help you with pretty much everything related to leadership, advocacy, and education. For example, we can help you find funding, start a new athlete group, or develop better public speaking skills. It's all at bcathletevoice.ca. And don't forget to look for us on Twitter and Facebook by searching BC Athlete Voice. Check it out.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam Territory on UBC's Point Grey campus. I'm with my co-host, Ajit.
Hey, hey.
And I'm your host, Spencer Latu. And Ajit, you had something very interesting to share with the listeners.
Yeah, we just both noticed, like, as of this instance, since we started this, started every show with this segment of, you know, identifying how the Indigenous subjugation is still going on in Canada. It's crazy how every week we have a new updated story. We're not continuing on from somewhere, another story where we picked off from. It's a new, completely new story on a completely different aspect, I believe. It was like land exploitation one week, and then it was some other form of like...
Oh, wait, RCMP posting racist remarks in their private Facebook group about
Indigenous
people.
Right, and it's just, you know... It's just, we're just trying to shed light here on the truth. And, you know, this just goes to show that, you know, if you really look, if you really take the time to look, you will find what we have found. And that is new stories of exploitation every single week.
Yeah, we look for it. Obviously, we're trying to, you know, highlight these issues that don't get talked about and don't get talked about in a serious manner. It's always like a tokenistic thing, like, which is why I'd say at the beginning, well, I had to talk a little shit to UBC, because every time somebody says it in class or something, I'm like, you don't even care. You don't even think about it.
Right.
You know, you don't think about them twice. You just say it so that you look good in front of all your friends, that you know, you're virtue signaling. You're showing that you care about something that you actually don't care about. Right.
Or it's a formality that they have to...
Oh, the bureaucratic process told me I had to thank the people for the stolen land. It's like, okay, well, why don't you engage with it? You know, and I read in an article that said that if you're going to do a land acknowledgement, make sure to like really engage with, you know, the horrendous nature that is in the genocide and the current colonization of Indigenous people that goes on to this very day. And, you know, every time I think about it, every time I say it, I'm just like, I'm just more and more disgusted, shocked, horrified, you know, that I'm somehow, you know, complicit in all this, and that doesn't make me feel good. I don't really feel good about myself. I'm happy that I engage with it, because that's the least I could do,
right?
You know, on this stolen land. But like, you know, I started off I had a presentation in class about not even Indigenous people, but to start off with the land acknowledgement and really tried to tie in, because I was talking about feminism in the 90s and really tried to bring in, you know, the struggle of Indigenous women and do it to really make, you know, make it, you know, at least show that I somewhat think about it.
Right.
And I think that's like the fact that we don't do this at this school just shows you the lack of critical thinking is going on. So it's hard. And I also heard on another podcast, they were talking with some Indigenous comrades, and they were discussing about how they view the land as not like, you know, land. It's their family, right? They grew up with it, and like they knew it with their grandfathers and their great grandfathers, right? Mm-hmm. Before, so like say that you're like a seventh generation person, like they knew the first,
right?
Because they were there. The river was always there, And I was like, wow, like that really took me by surprise. I was just like, oh my God, I didn't think I would feel something about that.
Right.
But like, that's powerful, you know? Like, we're only here for a finite amount of time, but those things are there forever.
Right.
It seems. Until climate change gets in the way and destroys it all.
Getting back to
the impending
doom.
It's a screwed up system.
But no, I think that generational point is so important because in a way they understand this area the best. And, you know, they were ahead of the curb, right? I mean, that's why we came here to, you know, make use, which is a euphemism for exploitation and subjugation of, you know, this wonderful land. And, you know, I know tons of families who've been here for generations. They express pride. And, you know, my great grandfather was an immigrant from, you know, whichever country, and, you know, like pride in this or whatnot, and which is absolutely great. But, you know, you kind of got to look at the kind of the weight of the history of Indigenous Canadians and how we literally could not have developed this country without their assistance.
No, they actually helped build it, and then we stabbed them in the back.
Right.
And we currently stab them in the back.
In the most basic way to the most complex ways, they helped us survive, literally.
Yeah, because we all died the first winter we were here.
Right.
And I say we as settlers, so it doesn't matter what race you are, doesn't matter when you showed up. Mm-hmm. If you're not Indigenous to Canada, you are a settler, period.
Right.
You could be sixth generation born from a settler, still a settler.
Right.
And if you're not willing to engage with that contradiction that this land isn't yours and you're not from this land, then we're not ready to move forward.
Right. And
it's not an insult.
Of course.
We're not you know, no, people didn't choose to be here. We have lots of intersecting issues here. You know, we have the slave laborers that, you know, work at Amazon in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's not like, oh, you're a privileged settler and then look at these poor Indigenous people as victims. That's not what we're saying.
Right.
What we're saying is that, you know, we have a problem that we need to solve, and we need to deal with the fact that we are part of the problem. How much of the part are we? Am I as big of a part of the problem as Jane Philpott, who says that, oh, it's everyone else's fault but mine for the fact that sterilization is happening on my watch and my ministry.
Right.
You know, obviously there's different levels of power there, people. So just wake up to that fact, okay? So it's
tough issue.
It's a tough issue. It just it makes me actually mad. So, well, on to another issue that will actually make me mad as well. Here we go. Okay, so we're gonna start a new segment. We had the guillotine last segment where we sent Jeff Bezos to the guillotine, and now we're just gonna check up on the police. So this is our police watch segment here. So let's see what's going on here. So the change, you know that beat,
right?
You heard that beat before? Okay, so the changing police narrative of why a black man was shot to death in an Alabama mall. This is by Holly Yan of CNN. Hoover, Alabama police can't seem to get their story straight on why an officer killed a man at an Alabama mall. First, they said a 21-year-old suspect shot and wounded two other people. Then they said Emantic Bradford didn't pull the trigger, but brandished a gun. Now we've learned Bradford didn't necessarily do that either. All the while, the real assailant who opened fire at the mall is still on the loose. Here's a quick breakdown of the shifting police narrative. Thanksgiving night. Who are you thankful for? I'm thankful for the police. What are you thankful for, Ajit?
Right,
I'm American Thanksgiving thankful for the police.
Right. I'm thankful for
the Spencer Lachey Show?
Yeah,
course.
Absolutely.
Sorry to steal that one from you.
No, I needed it.
Okay.
All right.
So, Thanksgiving night, police report a shooting. Hoover police reported a shooting Thursday night at River Chase Galleria Mall, an upscale mall south of Birmingham. Nice. It's upscale, so you knew they were there at a good time versus the low-scale malls, which they wouldn't even show up
right
to. Friday morning, police say the suspect was killed. Police said two men got into a fight at the mall, and one of the men shot the other twice in the upper body. Friday night, police say Bradford probably wasn't the shooter. Hoover police identified the man killed as Emantic Bradford Jr. They said Bradford fled the shooting scene while brandishing a handgun, and an officer shot him. But Bradford probably wasn't the gunman who shot and wounded an 18-year-old man at the mall, police said. They said the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency is now taking the lead on the investigation. New evidence now suggests that while Mr. Bradford may have been involved in some aspect of the altercation, he likely did not fire the rounds that injured the 18-year-old victim, Hoover police posted on Facebook. Investigators now believe that more than two individuals were involved in the altercation. The information indicates that there's at least one gunman still at large who could still be responsible for the shooting of an 18-year-old male and a 12-year-old female, police said. We regret that our initial media release was not totally accurate, but new evidence indicates that it was not. So far, Ajit, do you have any thoughts on what's happening? So we've moved on from Thanksgiving night to where the police reported a shooting to Friday morning, where they said that the suspect who started the shooting was killed, and now we're on Friday night when they said that the guy that was killed was not the shooter. Any thoughts on that so far?
I mean, it's kind of hilarious when you first introduced this story. I thought, is this the same story we were talking about a few weeks ago where police shot the security guard who stopped a mass shooting? And, you know, it just kind of sheds light on the situation. They don't know what's going on. All, you know, black man with a gun. Hey, I'm fearful. I think I shot the right guy, I think. He didn't even have a gun, though.
No. In fact, what we can say from Monday morning... Police, we can say with certainty Mr. Bradford brandished a gun. This is Monday, people. 4 days after the shooting, Hoover police in the city of Hoover offered their condolences to Bradford's family, but insisted that Bradford brandished a gun. We extend sympathy to the family of Emantic J. Bradford of Hueytown, who was shot and killed during Hoover police efforts to secure the scene in the seconds following the original altercation and shooting, a joint statement from the city and the police department said. We can say with certainty that Mr. Bradford brandishing a gun during the seconds following the gunshots, which instantly heightened the sense of threat to approaching police officers responding to the chaotic scene. Bradford's parents said their son had a permit to carry a weapon. Hoover police said the officer's body camera footage is now in the hands of Alabama law enforcement agency. Oh, that's good. You got them to the best people you could possibly get them to.
Gonna make use of that.
Later Monday morning, Ajit. Later Monday morning. So that was, we had Monday morning. Now we have later Monday morning. All right. We haven't even gotten to Monday afternoon.
This could be 30 minutes apart for all we know.
Seriously. Hoover police issued another clarification saying Bradford simply had a gun in his hand. Earlier, we stated that Mr. Bradford brandished a gun. To clarify, the word brandish was used because Mr. Bradford had a gun in his hand as police officers responded to the active shooter situation between mall patrons. Monday evening. The shooter is still out there. Hoover Mayor Frank Brocato said the state is still investigating the shooting, including the search for the suspect who remains at large. He also said the city is in process of requesting a meeting with the Bradford family. Did I mention something? Oh, yeah. EJ, the man that the police killed, was a Marine. So the Hoover police, murdered a guy in the Army. Good work, guys.
You know, I heard this very interesting statement once, is that you can tell a lot about what kind of narrative a certain agency is trying to spread by not just the information they state, but by the information they might be potentially withholding. I have an inkling that they knew this from the start or right when they, you know, shot the guy. And they just, you know, were finding, they just wanted to make a story which gave them a justification for doing that because they knew they effed up majorly because, you know, they didn't just shoot another black man in their mind. It was, you know, somebody with
a family,
of course. Beyond that, you know, somebody, it's just gonna harm their reputation more, right? Oh, damn it, we shot a Marine, a guy who,
oh damn it,
Lord knows was tougher than them.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's the thing too, right? Like they're doing this only because they know that they're like, ah shit, you know,
right.
Not only did we kill somebody, we let the guy that actually did the shooting get away, who shot a 12-year-old girl,
right.
and we shot an innocent, right, black guy again. And on top of that, he's a military man himself, and his whole family's in the military.
Oh, well, what do you know?
So, like, what are you supposed to say? That, oh, he didn't know what he was doing. He was one of them. You know, a lot of people say, oh, he looked like a criminal, or he's like, you know, some kind of like weird, like thuggish super predator, right, Hillary Clinton, you know, kind of description of a black person. And it's like, he's a military guy. I'm sure he's standing up straight. Right. You know what I'm saying? Were his pants sagging too low that day? So you had to shoot him?
You know what? African Americans, please just wear a military uniform wherever you go.
Yeah.
That way you won't be shot.
They might still do it.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they said that he was wearing his uniform, they shot him anyway.
Wouldn't.
You know what, Ajit? I don't think they can help themselves.
Maybe. It's just, it's psychological inhibition. At the very least.
And you know what it's reinforced by is this institution of policing. So when Absolutely. We criticize the police, and I'm sorry if any bootlickers turned off the show because they couldn't handle the truth being said about the police, but here's the truth is that they're part of a corrupt institution. Their whole institution is there for social control.
Right.
They're not there to enforce they're there to enforce the quote unquote law, as in the law set by the oligarchs, but they're not there to, you know, protect and serve. They're there to uphold the status quo.
Right.
They're there to inflict violence upon the people where they see fit. You know, if the people are, you know, are turning all violent because, I don't know, maybe there's a violent foreign policy in the United States, maybe. And the people are internalizing that as hate. And then they watch the hate happening on TV because guess what happens when a soldier, you know, support the troops, but they're shooting innocent poor people all over the globe. And then Americans look at that on TV and they become all violent themselves because they're like, you know what solves problems? Military might. Because that's what my nation taught me.
Right.
Is that's how we solve problems, is aggression. We send in the troops. We use guns.
Might is right.
And now they go into the mall and they have an altercation and they're like, you know, I'm going to solve this? With a gun, because it's how my country does things. It's how we do things. I'm an American.
Right. It's my right.
And then the police come in there and rather than deal with the root of the problem, which is American imperialism, they just start shooting people that they think could be suspects. And why do they think black people are suspects?
Because they've been taught that.
Yeah. That's what the police do. They uphold that.
Right.
And that's basically where we're at with these people.
I think, to continue on with what you said, I think it's easier to be, like, you know, considering that they're already in such a constrained place, you know, being a police officer, you know, and, you know, good for them for having pride in it. But I think it's easier to have this sort of vanity for imperialism rather than a willingness to change it, because it's just easier. It's already the status quo. It's already kind of in line. And of course, going on with the whole racial element, you know, it's kind of historical. Kind of these historical notions are ever present even in the mind of a, you know, lowly Alabama police officer, that, you know, what was colonialism at its basic form? White people subjugating other people of color, you know, and in a weird way, I don't know, maybe nobody's born racist, my belief is, but he's been programmed to believe that, you know. That
if it's not from the police themselves, it's from the media. You right. know, when you see pictures of black people, they're scary.
Right.
You know, they're not, there's no black people that are politicians. You know, there's no black people that are, you know, in positions of power. There's no, like, friendly black guy on television. It's always, like, scary, you know, super predators, you know? And I use that, you know, famous quote from Hillary Clinton, because even when we deal with the supposed good guys in the situation, Democrats in the United States, they're just as racist as the Republicans.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's because what we're saying, it's not about who we elect. It's the structures. Why are police, you know, brought in to police communities that they don't look like those people?
Right.
That doesn't make sense. You need people from that community to police that community.
Right.
You know, you have community standards. Let's say that there's a community going through a tough time and there's more people drinking, more people doing drugs because they all got laid off from the factory because the factory moved to Mexico. Mm. Are you going to have some guy come in there and be like, well, from my, you know, champagne socialist, even, well, there would be no socialist cops, from my, you know, liberal upbringing, you know, I just think that everyone needs to work harder and everyone that's doing drugs is a bad person, because they don't get it.
Right.
They don't know what it's like. They don't know what it's like to live in poverty, don't know where your next meal is going to come from. They don't know that half those people that are, like, freaking out on the bus in Vancouver, you know, they're all spazzing out, those homeless people. It's because they haven't eaten in 2 days.
Right, right.
But if you're from, you know, West Van, you're from North Van, you're from the west side of Vancouver, right. You know, that's never, hunger?
No.
You don't know what that is. And those are the people we have, either being the media that share these stories to us, or even worse, they're the boys in blue, you know, pulling out guns and billy clubs to deal with social problems through violence. How insane is that?
Right.
If we're, you know, it feels like you and I are protecting and serving. You know, we're protecting the people from the structures that are doing it. What do the police do? They're upholding the structures. They're not serving. You know who they're serving? The oligarchs.
Right.
They're not serving the people. And I hate that when cops and all those people try to guilt trip you into thinking that they're doing a good job. They're not doing anything. They kill like 25 dogs a day. The police are pigs. And that's how they're always going to be. They'll be pigs until they die too. So we're going to have to take a short break for commercials, and then we'll be right back with more Spencer Latu Show.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire, Cheetos, fleece material, and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute. Just visit citr.ca/discorder/contribute. You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
AMS Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the Food Bank or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. I'm with my co-host Ajit.
What's up?
I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and we're going to get back into it, talking about the House passing back-to-work legislation to end Canada Post's strike. So this is news coming straight out of Ottawa, our nation's capital, and there the parliamentarians and the Senate and the elected officials of the Liberal and Conservative Party have decided that, you know what, for these people making nothing, it's their time to go back to work while they go sit on their ass. And they actually, I didn't know this, you know, there's like a summer break for like politicians.
If I can just interject, one of my most favorite shows, The Wire, it has a scene where, with a bunch of politicians, right? And they're kind of stressing over the upcoming election. The scene pretty much ends with, we got to get our shit together. We all don't want a real job, right? And they all burst into laughter because they acknowledge that they don't even have a real job.
Yeah,
they're
no.
Just awesome.
That is The Wire. Oh, I need to watch that. I still haven't watched it. My family's all watching it. I just need to get into that. I'm slow. So, politicians who don't work decide to tell the workers what to do. That's the headline from today. No, the actual headline is House passes back to work legislation to end Canada Post strike. So, coming straight out of Ottawa, the article reads, MPs have passed back-to-work legislation to end the Canada Post strike after a late night of debate in the House of Commons and a staged walkout by New Democrats. That's nice of the NDP. Shouts out to NDP. Bill C-89, the Postal Services Resumption and Continuation Act, passed by a vote of 166-43 early Saturday morning. It now goes before the Senate, which is sitting this weekend. That's nice of them to work on the weekend, those really busy senators. Oh, that's awesome. If the bill receives royal assent, just in case you forgot that we aren't still a colony, with technically the head of state is the queen, so so before anybody gets too, you know, high and mighty about how great Canada is, just remember that. Canada Post workers will be forced back on the job at noon the following day. And I just want to take a pause here because I get into a lot of arguments about people about jobs, and they're saying, you don't have to go to work. You don't have to have a job. You know, you can go get your own job and then that job will treat you better in the marketplace, blah, 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 all that bullshit. So here's what I'm trying to get across. So even when people who have legitimate grievances against their workplace and their working conditions and want to do something about it, so they just stop working because no one's going to listen to them if they keep working.
Right.
The government will step in there and save the people who were looking to profit off these workers and force them back to the job.
Right. And it wasn't even a full-on strike. It was a rotating strike.
Yeah, so, like, it's not even... And, you know, quite frankly, I wish we could, like, get a general strike going in solidarity with these guys because, you know what, this is crazy.
Right.
Forcing people back to work. It gets worse, so... Back to the article. Even before MPs had begun debating the bill on Friday, they butted heads over a motion to fast-track C-89. All but a handful of NDP MPs staged a walkout during a vote on the motion. Thank you, NDP. One by one, the New Democrats nodded at the speaker and walked out, some with fists raised towards the public viewing galleries. Solidarity, comrades. Love that. The move came after the NDP pledged their solidarity with the striking postal workers, some of whom had spent the day occupying ministers' offices. After the walkout, six New Democrats remain in the House because that was the maximum number of third-party MPs who would be permitted to speak to the bill under the parameters of the motion, according to the NDP. The fast-track motion passed 173-13, allowing the House to move through multiple legislative steps in rapid succession by limiting the length of debate and letting Labour Minister Patty Hajdu determine when debate would end. As she kicked off debate on the bill itself, Hajdu was met with chants of shame, shame, shame from the public viewing galleries where postal workers had convened. As they continued to disrupt the proceedings, Parliament Hill security escorted the demonstrators out, with at least one leaving in handcuffs, and the union vowing this would only be the beginning of a bitter battle. They're attacking democracy and the rights of workers, NDP leader Jagmeet Singh said in the House foyer after the walkout, saying the Liberals had completely undermined the workers' ability to negotiate a fair deal. Bill C-89 spells out the process for the postal workers to return to the job without delay while continuing negotiations with the new independent mediator arbitrator. So, this is screwed up. Ajit, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, you can just see the corporate influence behind the scenes. The fact that, and it's a tricky situation because Canada Post, obviously being a public company, you'd assume that, you know, the accountability being placed on the government means that they would have the interests of the workers at heart, but not really. You know, the truth's right out there. Lobbying works, people, and they just got lobbied back to work.
Yeah, they and you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because let's talk a little bit about business and the postal service, right? So a lot of guff is sent in the way of the public sector. You know, there's always the cries of inefficiency versus to which I would say, how is that possible? Do you have any proof of that? Of course, if they look it up, then it turns out they're exactly the same, because why would there be any difference? It's structured the exact same way, except one gets money from the public, one gets money from private. So it doesn't really matter. In fact, you can make the argument that private sector is more inefficient because of the need for to create profits for the wealthy shareholders, the CEOs, the executives, the board members, and the managerial class. So.
Right.
There you go. Problem solved. When you nationalize stuff, hint, hint, nudge, nudge on where we need to go with this. Furthermore, to even say that nationalizing is even, and a lot of people attack, you know, the Postal Service and other crown corporations like, oh, this is socialism. First of all, the workers must own the means of production for it to be socialism, okay? The Canada Post workers are employees. They don't get to choose their own conditions, as you can see by the fact that they're forced to strike.
Right.
They're not in control.
No.
This is capitalism. And the reason why I need to bring up the fact that it is capitalism is because, just like within capitalism, the capitalist class, although they do control the state, they also love to bash the state and complain and bitch about the public sector being slow and inefficient.
Right.
The truth is the capitalist class benefits from the postal service being owned by the public sector, because when things are in the public sector, no capitalist can own it. Right. So you don't have guys like Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos loves the Canada Post.
Right.
Low, low, low prices, way better than those UPS guys. Because guess what? When you use UPS, when you use FedEx and stuff like that, you need to pay off all the shareholders.
Right.
You need to pay off all the CEOs. You got to pay off all the executives. You got to pay off all the managers. And then you got to pay the workers. That's a lot of people to pay.
Yeah.
Versus public, you don't. You got to pay like maybe the managers a little bit more. The workers are getting piss poor pay, which is why they're on strike in the first place. But all the other people are kind of taken care of. They get a lot more modest salaries than the millions, if not billions of dollars that, like, you know, big corporations pull in.
Right.
So it's just bullshit. And it's like, they're projecting their own stupid ideas onto something that clearly works better. Because guess what? It turns out it's in everyone's interest to have the Canada Post owned by the people and just have it paid for through public money. But instead, because, you know, the oligarchs are so greedy, we're talking the level of greed in Canada is that we have 82. What was that? What was our article? It was 84 families that have as much wealth as New Brunswick and Newfoundland combined.
Right.
84 families.
84. Yeah.
That's a bit absurd. You know, why don't we just, you know, and you, we were talking earlier, and how much are these Canada Post workers making?
Oh, I think the base salary is like $20 an hour, 21.
And they're expected to feed a family on that, eh?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they're overworked. They're major security issues because they got to deal with bigger packages now. So there's concerns. They got to work ridiculous amounts of hours from what I understand. But then at the same time, it's an inequitable share of labor hours because they want to, Canada Post want to do, wants to institute cutbacks on those less tenured people, right? So it's just
a big squeeze. It's a big squeeze. Exactly. There's enough to go around. We can take care of the postal workers. God forbid they make a living wage.
Right.
Oh my God, how dare they? Right. They work 40 hours a week. They shouldn't be entitled to food and shelter. Okay, whatever.
Right.
I don't know about you guys, but I would hope that every Canadian that puts in 40 hours a week at work, which is too much time in my opinion, but still, if you put in that amount of time, you should have a roof over your head and food on the table.
Absolutely.
And that shouldn't cost more than 66% of your salary.
Right. You shouldn't be like, you know,
you shouldn't be an indentured servant.
Right.
Which is what these people are.
And it's important to note that their contract negotiations have been ongoing for a year. So this is not new. The fact that a strike began October 21st and it got squashed less than 2 months into it, 90 days into it, right? And even though their contract negotiations have been going on for a year, so these workers can't even really exercise their right.
Yeah, it's almost like this country that talks about freedom of expression really doesn't care about freedom of expression, especially when it comes from the people, huh?
Right.
Or the workers. It's only like if you're rich enough to express yourself, you deserve to express yourself.
And just
everyone else we don't want to hear from.
Right. Timing is key on this. Why now? Look at the date, people. December is around the corner. What is this? Peak consumer season.
Oh,
Christmas,
yeah.
The holidays. And what? We're all too lazy to go to the mall now. We all just shop online. And who delivers those goods? Canada Post, right?
Workers, real human beings.
Right.
That box that ended up on your door, a human being put it there. Mm. So can you please just have a little bit of respect?
Not a drone?
Yeah, no, not a drone. Right. It's a human being, okay? Right. And that's their place in society. And it's an essential service that we all use. And they should have a dignified existence because their labor is being consumed by all of us.
Right.
So chill out, everyone that's getting mad at them for not getting back so you can get all your Christmas crap in time. Shut up. You sound like a child. Anyways, so, and that's the final thing we really want to talk on here. So, this kind of gets missed in the rest of the article. They're basically the liberals are forcing them to go back to work because they now view the postal service as essential. Weird how the businesses have turned their back. You know, they always talk shit about the postal service, talk about how the postal service sucks.
Right.
And then now it's essential.
We need you.
Because we need you to fund, I don't know, our consumer economy.
Right.
A consumer economy that if you buy Starbucks, rich white people that have owned homes forever and have inherited immense amounts of wealth will blame that on you for participating in the consumer economy,
right,
for your own destitute conditions, which obviously if we look at wage earners over time, you'll see that wages haven't grown since 1967.
Right.
So it's not the Starbucks who's doing it, people.
No.
It's a grift by the capitalist class. You ever wonder how billionaires are possible? Oh yeah, someone's going to get screwed real hard.
Right.
And that's all of us. So, and then Ajit, you brought up some external points. So where is this? So we're talking about the holiday season and, you know, what do you think the external factors are? Where do you think the external forces are that are really, you know, putting their, you know, really twisting the liberal and conservative arms right now? Do you know any corporations that might be interested in doing that?
Yeah, I'd read in another article, I believe it was by Global News, and Rebecca Connolly, I believe, was the author, mentioned specifically eBay was putting pressure on Parliament Hill. Also, business interest groups, specifically, I believe the small business interest group was one of them. Those two corporations, a corporation, a representative of many corporations, a multitude of them, were really putting pressure on the Liberal government to, you know, deal with it, you know, get those guys back to work. And it was interesting how much that expedited the process once they got involved, once they got their, you know, voices heard. Because, you know, nobody's more marginalized than eBay.
Yeah, poor eBay. If only they can catch a break.
Right.
So that's interesting that you mentioned that, because it sounds like we have business interests dictating to the government, which is the institution that's supposed to represent the people.
Right.
And if the people are comprised of mainly workers, it's weird that we have interests that aren't worker-related telling the institution that's supposed to be accountable to the workers how to deal with the workers.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to, you know, obviously sound off the alarm bells, but what do you call it when you have business and government interlocked, walking in the same direction and getting the same ideas done to exploit the workers?
I think it's that F word.
Yeah. What's that F word again?
Fascism.
Yes, fascism. That's basically what this is. And I'm not saying that the liberals are fascists or the conservatives are fascists. Relax. Relax.
Let's just say they're expressing fascist qualities.
What we live in is corporate fascism.
Right.
So it's not like the old industries of like, you know, oh, let's get the, you know, we're going to crack some skulls at the factory to make people produce more like pots and pans and stuff like that. That's not where we're at right now. What we have is the corporations completely control the parliament in Canada. And largely the world, but right. Let's just focus on the Canadian example. Right. So we, you know, when we got the Spencer Lachey show up and running, it was right around the Kinder Morgan whole debacle.
Right.
And there it was very obvious that the liberals were completely beholden to the Kinder Morgan interests. Completely. Why else would you buy the pipeline? It was completely unpopular from every side of the aisle. The right wing hated it. The center hated it. The left wing hated it. You know who really loved it? Kinder Morgan.
Right.
Now, who really wants those Canada Post workers to get back to work? Do most people really care? I'm going to be honest here. Do most people, like, I know that there's a lot of angry Facebook comments, possibly by bots, but possibly just like really, really idiotic people who just like to get pissed off on Facebook. Right. If we took a poll of Canadians, how many people really wanted them to get back to work and would honestly get behind back to work legislation, forcing people to go back into labor that they're unhappy with and they're unhappy with their conditions?
Right.
I don't think most of the people would be behind that.
I mean,
I honestly don't. I have some glimmer of hope in society.
Right.
Do you?
I mean, people don't get super angry what your football jersey came 2 weeks later than it was expected to. So what? Like, yeah, you're right. And a lot of these people, I feel, you know, they're members of your community, right? So you can empathize with them.
I would hope.
I would hope, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know, I'm assuming, you know, a lot of these people, their parents are employees. They themselves are employees, workers, laborers.
We're all workers.
Majority of us, yes.
I would hope, unless you're like delusional and you think that you're a bigwig because you make like 80K.
Right.
While someone makes 8 billion. Boy, you look stupid then being a bootlicker, huh?
Right. Like, come on.
Yeah, and that's another
thing. You climb the ladder?
Yeah. It's like, and the people who are like, oh, I'm a capitalist. I'm like, do you own the means of production? Huh, weird. Sounds like you're just a worker.
Just
with some delusions of grandeur.
And this other distaste for unions. And I will admit that union practices have been quite shady, because what kind of happens when you kind of...
It's one gang dealing with another gang. Exactly. I'm sorry, people.
That's what happens.
Right? I'm sorry.
And that's where they gain this reputation from. And that's why, you know, it's funny. Now that unions are feeling the squeeze, and they have been for the past 30 years since the 1980s, that they're finally gone back to their more democratic roots in which they were, you know, meant to be, right?
Yeah.
Once they're put in the tough space. Prior to that, they were doing the same shifty stuff.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, well, and this is what I'm saying. And like, if anything, just look at how, like, why do we even have a system where we need to do this? Why can't we have a system where people are paid a decent existence, you know, and then people do the things that we need in society?
Right.
Sounds like there's some bigger contradictions. Probably the one that's where we have people making billions of dollars. We have 80 families worth, like, the entirety of two provinces. We should probably deal with that contradiction, because I'm sure that, like, you know, maybe if 84 families didn't have all the wealth in Canada, it would be easier to, you know, that everyone would just be a little less on edge.
Right.
People wouldn't have to go on strike. You know? That's all I'm saying. It's just food for thought, people. So, you know, we're going to have to wrap up the show. Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed our segments. If you want to hear anything else, please find me on Instagram at Spencer Latu, Facebook Spencer Latu. Send me a message. Let me know what you want to hear, what you don't want to hear, what you like, what you don't like. This is a show for the people. If you want to hear more or listen to our back catalog, we are on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Check out the Spencer Latu show over there. We'll be back next next Tuesday to talk more about the horrible issues that are all going on around us, and to end on that, we'll be listening to some more awesome tunes from CITR once we sign off, so stick around for that if you want to listen to some great music. Other than that, G, you got anything to say?
Just power to the people, man.
Yeah, power to the people. You know, we don't get enough of that, so solidarity everybody out there, and have a good night.
AMS Food Bank.
Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the food bank or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
Allow me to tell you about Unceded Airways.
What's that?
Isn't that some kind of indigenous radio show?
It sure is. Tell me, are you down for decolonization? Yeah. What?
I certainly wish I could hear about indigenous issues, people, and events on the radio.
You're in luck, because Unceded Airwaves talks about all these things and more every Monday.